Yo, welcome back everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah Kid Podcast. Welcome back. So, new iteration, new episode, new week. After week 14, NFC East standings kind of switch up a little bit. I'm gonna obviously talk about the Cowboys Eagle game. We got some things to get into. Talk about the Chiefs and what's been going on with them lately. Travis Kelce, is he gonna retire? I don't know. We'll get into that. I got some interesting stuff I want to talk about. So we're getting all of it. We're gonna cover it. Obviously, I will give you guys my weekly top 10 teams list. It's definitely gonna have some changes near the top, maybe, I would say. So yeah, let's get into it. Shouts out to everyone that's listening. But first and foremost, you guys know how we start the pod. This is your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kidd of the Isaiah Kidd Podcast. Greatly, greatly appreciate everyone that's tuning in, sharing the pod, downloading it, and or streaming it, whatever app you use. I greatly appreciate it. I'm on a lot of apps or whatever, a lot of streaming platforms. So greatly appreciate it. However you're listening to me, whenever time you have time to listen to me, greatly appreciate you listening and tapping in. Okay, so I would say there was a few like big games, Chiefs, Bills, right? There was a few big games that came on. There was a lot of divisional games that were played. But I think undoubtedly the biggest game of week 14 was Cowboys Eagles. And I've watched both of these teams a lot. Whether it's like the live games, I've watched pretty much every Cowboy game. I've watched most of the Eagles games. And then I like sometimes even watch like the quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts and Dak, like all 22. Right? I watch a lot of both of these teams. And I watched the first game between Cowboys and Eagles. Eagles went away with the win and a close one. And then this game on Sunday night. And after watching both of those games, what I come away with is the Cowboys are better than Eagles. I mean, I don't know, that's what I get when I watch both games. I thought Dallas played well enough. I think there was a couple just misfortunate things, like Dak stepping out on a two-point conversion. You know, here or there, some calls could be argued, whatever. That's what kind of transpired the first game. Dallas lost it. Okay. But then they come back in the second game, Sunday night, prime time, at home, where they're practically, it seems like they're practically unbeatable at home. And they kill the Eagles by 20, 33-13. And that has to be on, if you're being honest about yourself, if you're being honest with yourself, and you take away all the, you know, the Cowboys stuff and, you know, all the things that come with the Cowboys, right? Because there's a lot of media members, a lot of people that want to talk out, and they're not as fond of the Cowboys because I don't know, it's popular to kind of quote unquote hate on the Cowboys. It's popular, right? But you have to walk away after watching both of those games and say the Cowboys are a better team. Point blank, period. They're a better team. At this moment, they are a better team. That's it. And if these teams were to meet up again in the playoffs for a third time, I think the Cowboys will win. And I think it doesn't matter if the Cowboys are at home or away. I feel like the Cowboys are better. They look like the more disciplined team. Cowboys stars, their impact players seem to have a little bit more juice. Whether it's Dak, Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, some of the Eagles' better players, especially on defense, a little bit older, right? Like Fletcher Cox, Darius Slay, they're older guys. But we all know it's kind of like It's been, this has been like creeping into a lot of, at least my mind, where the Eagles secondary has glaring issues. Eagles secondary issues are so glaring, and their front four is good. That they have tremendously built a solid front four. And they got some young guys on that front four as well, like Jalen Carter, you know, Jordan Davis. They got some really nice pieces on the front four. Hassan Reddick, he's having a double digit sack season. But from linebackers all the way to their DBs, they lack tremendously. And you know, you look at the two top teams in the NFC, 49ers, Cowboys. When you play with Dallas, and you know, or if you play the Niners, you have to deal with first a ton of speed and a ton of physicality from various positions, right? Like from like Dallas, you look at Dallas. Tony Pollard is starting to get it going. He's finding his groove. Obviously, Dak is playing at an MVP caliber level, and I have kind of made my sentiment about Dak. I look at CeeDee Lamb. He's emerging into an all-pro caliber receiver. Brandon Cooks, he's always been a speed demon. And now you got the tight end, Jake Ferguson. He's slowly emerging into a star. And then you look at the Niners and what they got on their skill position. It's weapons galore. Obviously, they have C-Mac. They got Debo. They got Kittle. They got Ayuk. So all of that, like the Cowboys and Niners, ton of speed, and they got some finesse players. But at heart, they're physical teams. They're two of the most physical teams in the league. And like Philly first doesn't match, like last 2 weeks, Philly hasn't matched their physicality. And then also their DBs and linebackers can't keep up with these guys in open space. Like they cannot keep up in open space with these guys. So that is a glaring problem that is kind of not going away. And then they signed Shaq Leonard, but like Darius Leonard is a reason why the Colts cut him. It's a reason why they released him. He's slow. His abilities like tremendously took a hit after all the back, you know, with the back injuries and so forth. But the main thing that made him all pro for all those years in Indianapolis was because of his speed. His speed is no longer there. He's no longer the same player. So that doesn't help the Eagles defensive like support group. That doesn't help them either. But like these guys, and the funny part of it is like Dallas, for so long, the Cowboys have been picked apart and like they're undisciplined. And a lot of people, and you got to give this guy credit, a lot of people bash Mike McCarthy, whether it's for the clock management issues, you know, all of the penalties, you know, early on in the season, the first like few games of the season, play calling was a little shaky. But man, Mike McCarthy today, you ask yourself, Cowboys coaching staff, Eagles coaching staff, is it even close? Like the combination of Mike McCarthy and Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn, obviously DC, he's probably the best defensive coordinator in football at this point. Like the production that this Dallas defense and the turnovers, just like everything that we see from this Dallas defense ever since Dan Quinn has taken over this team a couple years ago, it's phenomenal. So you ask yourself, like, Cowboys have a lot of advantages over Philly at this moment. Who got the better defense? Dallas. Who has the better offense? Maybe Dallas. Who has a better quarterback? Dallas. Like, and then you ask yourself, I think in the grand scheme of things, I think a lot of people question, well, hey, is Mike McCarthy like an elite coach? Can he call up a good game plan? And I think Dak is great as Dak has been playing. Dak is, you gotta give, like, I don't think there is no way around it, around people not trying to credit Dak. Yeah, like there's no way to go around the fact of saying that Dak Prescott is playing really well right now. And not just really well, but like he's the MVP front runner. And I've been kind of like saying this and pushing this over the past couple of weeks because I didn't think it was much of an argument or a debate. But now after this victory, there's not much you can say. Now they obviously have Buffalo, Miami, and Detroit coming up. So that those would be some really nice matchups, and he can kind of like buffer his argument rather. But back to Philly and Dallas. And here's where guys like Nick Sirianni, I started to like, we got to start questioning. Because he's rah-rah guy. He's rah-rah guy. It's a lot of rah-rah. But in terms of Nick Sirianni, Brian Johnson, Brian Johnson's the OC. And you could definitely tell this Philly team is not the same without Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon. Like, it's not the same, right? Right. And those guys are having their success, whatever, but it's not the same. It's not the same. And I think, like I said, you're talking about from a coaching aspect, especially on Sunday night, what we saw, Mike McCarthy, Dan Quinn by landslide. And this is where you ask yourself, a guy like Nick Sirianni, what does he do? What does he do? He's an offensive-minded guy, right? Like, he was an OC for Indian, but what does he do? He doesn't, like, where's his fingerprints in the game plan? Because over the past 2 weeks, he's faced Kyle Shanahan and Mike McCarthy. And while those guys, Kyle Shanahan dialing it up, Mike McCarthy dialing it up, calling out plays and shit, he hasn't done anything. I don't know what his role is in terms of the week-to-week game plan, right? Brian Johnson, young guy, like, they got some young coordinators, and Nick Sirianni, like I said, he can be a little irritating with his rah-rah and his antics, but now, like you need to find a pitch. I don't know what Nick Sirianni's pitch is, right? I think Philly also, just looking at them from an offensive perspective, they do rely a lot on A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith to be, like, really dominant. And the moment that they're off, their offense just looks like it's in quicksand. Like, I feel like Philly, last year, they would run the football and they rely on the running game to open up for the passing game. Seems like they're a little bit more pass heavy. Jalen Hurts himself looks a little off, doesn't seem to have the same rhythm that he had last year. And occasionally, Philly has the ability to hit these big explosive plays, but and it'll keep them in game, and it kind of like covers up the bandage or the wounds. But in its totality, Philly didn't have those explosive big plays to cover up for all the mistakes that they made against Dallas. That was taken away, or it just didn't happen. Like, you know, it just didn't happen. And obviously their turnovers don't help. But with Philly, man, you got to ask yourself, and let me say this, because I know I'm saying like I'm talking bad about Philly. But no, it was a bad showing, and they lost. And this has kind of been a theme where their secondary has been atrocious. Last 2 weeks, it's been a backbreaker, and it's essentially lost them the games. But this is still a good Philly team. They're 10-3. Funny part is Dallas is the better team, not probably. Dallas is the better team, and both teams could very much well win out, and Philly would win the division. And if I was a betting man, as good as Dallas looks right now, and they look better than Philly, Philly's remaining schedule just works out in their favor because they play the Giants twice. They play the Giants twice. That's I feel like that's all I have to say. While meanwhile, Dallas has to play Miami, who's pretty good. Buffalo, who's fighting for their playoff life and hopes. Detroit, who's trying to lock up the North and trying to lock up a top seed. So, like, that, and then they have the Commanders to finish out the season. But that's Dallas' last few remaining games, while Philly has to play the Giants twice, Seattle, I think. Like, that is leaning towards in the Eagles' favor. And that's the weird thing about this game. Dallas is on top of the NFC East for now. But, you know, if Philly, it would probably take like a Philly collapse for Dallas to win the NFC East. The probability of them winning the NFC East is just low. So if I was a betting man, I would probably still bet that Philly wins the NFC East because I looked at the remaining schedule. I don't see two more losses. Hell, there probably won't be another loss. Who knows? But Dallas, up until this point, is the better team. And if they played for a third time, I'm convinced that Dallas would win, home or away. Point play, period. And I want to talk about the MVP a little bit with Dak, the whole MVP convo with Dak and Brock Purdy. And I feel like in sports, it's weird because it's okay to sometimes, like, change your thoughts, right? And people who can't admit that they're wrong is like, okay. But in this case, when it comes to players, teams, coaches, etc., when you, especially in this, like, when you're talking about, like, just anything in general, but, like, just for sports. If we're having a conversation, say you have an opinion about a player and they're coming out of college, they get drafted, and you're like, I don't think this guy's going to be all that, right? Whatever. Turns out, a few years later down the road, guy can kind of play. That'd be that. You have new information. For instance, I was not a huge Jalen Hurts guy. I wasn't a huge Jalen Hurts guy at Alabama. Obviously, he was productive at Alabama, but I wasn't sold. I wasn't huge on him as an NFL quarterback. I wasn't sold at Jalen. I wasn't sold when he went to Oklahoma. Like I said, very much productive and gotten better a little bit, but I still wasn't sold. Hell, he got drafted by Philly. He played his first couple times. His first sighting as an Eagle, I still wasn't sold about Jalen Hurts. But then they went 8-7-1 that year happened, and they went to the wild card and they lost to Tampa Bay. And then last year happened and they went to the Super Bowl. And this year, like, so I got new information and my original opinion about Jalen Hurts, I didn't think he'll work out as an NFL quarterback, has obviously altered. He's a really good quarterback. He's a good quarterback. Now, is he elite? No. But he's a really good quarterback, right? But when you get new information and you continue to state the same thing despite the new information saying otherwise or it's saying differently, you start to lose all credibility. So that's why I come on here and I was like, I try to keep my credibility. And I say, hey, if I stick with an opinion and that opinion hasn't aged well, I'll tell you, I'll be the first to tell you guys. And this is my thing with Dak, with guys like Dak and Brock Purdy, where this is why I think I talked about it a couple weeks ago, preconceived bias. When people are having this whole MVP conversation and it's concerning Dak Prescott, we have this preconceived bias, this preconceived notions coming into the season or just what we think of Dak Prescott throughout his career. Instead, no, the MVP conversation is not about what you think about him, what you thought about him last year, what you thought about him 3 years ago, his rookie year. No, it's about what's happening in reality. And the new information that we got and provided, looking at his numbers, looking at the tape, dude is playing at a really high level. And there's not too many quarterbacks right now that you would take over him. If we're talking about right now, what's happening? And with Brock Purdy, sure, granted, I don't think he's an MVP. I don't think he should be an MVP candidate. I think he's playing really good. I think he's a Pro Bowl caliber type of quarterback. But to his defense, people saying he's a game manager or like, no. He looks a little different from Jimmy Garoppolo. And granted, it helps when you got Christian McCaffrey, you know, you have Deebo Samuel, you have all of these weapons, like, it helps, yes. But we can't stick on an opinion once we get new information that says otherwise, right? like, continue to say that Brock Purdy isn't a good quarterback. Like, it's just blasphemous. Now, is he elite? Is he good? Is he elite? That's a whole nother different conversation, right? Right? Like, the mere fact you asking the question, is he elite? You're already acknowledging the fact that he is good, because in order to be elite, you have to be good, right? I would assume. So it's kind of funny when people ask that question, is this guy elite? It's like, okay, with that question, you're already acknowledging that he's good. So I'm not gonna argue with that. But there's people that still question if Brock Purdy's good. And I'm like, yeah, he's good. Yeah, he can play. He can play. And we got new information that says so. And the information that people are using is outdated. Same thing with Dak. Now, is Dak the MVP frontrunner? Why wouldn't he be? What's the other argument for other candidates? And I get people, you know, Tyreek Hill, and I get it, you know. Tyreek Hill's having a great season. So I'm not mad if someone says Tyreek Hill or Christian McCaffrey. But I think Dak right now, and for the past month and a half, he's been the best quarterback in football. That's simple. The numbers say it. The tape say it. Like, Cowboys on the roll, he's been the best quarterback in football. All right, so let's talk about the Chiefs. Now they lost to Buffalo 20-17, and it's a big old discussion and talk around, you know, Kadarius Toney offside penalty. He was offsides, yes, he was definitely offsides. Now, obviously the magnitude of that loss is kind of huge, because first, you know, everybody just thought the AFC West was going to be a cakewalk, which I'm a proponent of it. I thought it was going to be a cakewalk as well, given the teams and the situations that they were in. But hey, Kansas City now, sitting at 8-5, only have a one game lead. But I think they'll figure it out. I think they'll win their division. But outside of that, other than that, bigger things than that, you got Miami and Baltimore, who are still sitting on top of Kansas City. And this game was kind of big for Kansas City. It's always big when Kansas City kind of plays Buffalo, because, you know, those two teams kind of go back and forth. But Mahomes was frustrated. And I think that frustration, obviously, it's about the call. But I think deeper down, it is frustration from just what the offense output has been really throughout the season. Like, you know, there's been a couple of times where you look at Kansas City offensively and, you know, they put up some points, they put up good yardage, but more times than not this year, we have kind of scratched our head and we've had some eyebrow raising questions about what they can do offensively. And this is a big game because, hey, if they win that game versus Buffalo, they're sitting at 9-4. They overtake Miami because they got the head-to-head tiebreaker. And, you know, that puts them, what, only one game back of Baltimore. But now they're two games back of Baltimore. So Baltimore seems like they're gonna wrap that number one seed up, I would probably bet. And Kansas City, the best they can do is the two seed. Now, I think the two seed is still real because Miami has to still play, I think, Buffalo again. And then they have, I know Miami has to play Dallas coming up in the next coming week. So it can get really real, right? But they're 8-5. And I was going to save this take for a couple more weeks down the line, right? I was going to save it. But I just go out and blurt it now. I think this year's Chiefs team is the 2018 Patriots. They remind me a lot of the 2018 Patriots. I really believe that. Now, here's where I'm coming from. Think of the 3 year span. When you think about it, it's kind of crazy. But think of the 3 year span of 2016, 2017, 2018. 2016, we obviously know what happened. Patriots came back 28-3 versus the Falcons. They came back and won the Super Bowl. 2017, the following year, I think they're more talented in 2017. I think this is like one of their more talented groups. But in 2017, they come back, they get to the Super Bowl, they lose to the Philadelphia Eagles with backup Nick Foles. Cool, you know the rest is history. 2018, they find a way to get to the Super Bowl and beat the Rams. They beat Kansas City at home in AFC on the road. In an AFC Championship game to get to the Super Bowl. That I mentioned the 2018, and I mentioned those teams prior because the 2018 Patriots were not that talented. Like, granted, you know, Stephon Gilmore was having a great year. He was at the peak of his powers. But they had like offensively, that team had no business being a Super Bowl caliber team. Like, Gronk was obviously banged up, nicked up. Edelman was aging. Tom was still Tom. But that 2018 Patriots team was not talented at all. And I keep saying it with this Chiefs team. I think this is the best defense that they have had in the Mahomes era, right? But I don't think offensively they don't really, outside of Mahomes and maybe Kelce on a good day, they don't scare anybody. They don't scare anybody. Nobody scares you. So that's just how I feel about this year's Chiefs team. That 2018 Patriots, they found ways to win games. You didn't know how they were going to win games. It wasn't always, it was rarely pretty. It wasn't always an offensive firepower. Like, it wasn't. But they just found ways to win games that year. And they were devoid of talent, especially on the offensive side. And that's what I get with this Chiefs team. I get the same kind of vibe. I think over these next coming weeks, they'll try to put it together. I think they have some good performances from their defense, like they have been getting all year. I think Mahomes will win them a game or two. And they'll wrap up this division, and I think they'll probably end with the 2 seed. Throughout the playoffs, they're going to probably, in order to get back to the Super Bowl, they're going to probably have to go on the road and win a road game. Now, Travis Kelce retiring. I had a friend ask me. He was like, do you think Travis Kelce retires this year? And I was like, my initial answer was no. I don't think he retires this year. But then I started thinking, I'm like, hold up, retiring. And I'm like, after this year, I started like, oh. Because I'm like, what else does Kelce have to prove? I think it's possible. I don't think it is out the realm of possibility at all. He now has a billionaire girlfriend. That helps, right? Like, Taylor Swift may have heard her. That helps, you know, but then he's made a lot of money himself, more money than he's ever needed, right? ultimately, he's going to go down as the best pass catching tight end in history ever, right? He has 2 rings. And think about it, like me saying he has 2 rings. Okay, cool. But think about the list of great players, like great players that are non-quarterbacks in league history with multiple rings. Think about it. It's a really great list of all-time great players, superstar caliber players with multiple Super Bowl rings, non-quarterback. Like, non-quarterback, it's a lot of great players. Like, a lot of them. Like, so that's a good, that's a nice list to be a part of. And then obviously he's going to be a future Hall of Famer. And he's going to be one of the best players of his generation, right? So I don't, and also the biggest thing with Travis Kelce, he has a personality where I could, would I be surprised when, whenever, not saying it's after this year, but whenever Travis Kelce decides to retire and hang it up, would I be surprised if I saw Travis Kelce, like, if he had like a reality show on Hulu? Would I be, no, I wouldn't be surprised. He has a podcast with his, like, he's already kind of like diving into that. He has a personality. So he has a big personality. So that's another way he could make money. Would I be surprised if he had like a, I don't know, like a show, a talk show, or I don't know. I would not be surprised because I can see Travis Kelce doing that. And, you know, kind of interesting, but looking at those Patriot teams and the Patriots dynasty, they had different iterations. And if they, you know, if this Chiefs thing ultimately become a true dynasty, they're going to go through different iterations of teams where they don't have Tyreek Hill. It's been 2 years. They're going to go through iterations where they don't have Chris Jones, maybe. They're going to go through iterations where they don't have Travis Kelce, right? Like, The Patriots is a true dynasty. The first wave iteration team that won 3 Super Bowls with Brewski and Mike Vrabel, Rodney Harrison, like those guys, that first wave, that was the first iteration. Richard Seymour, like that was the first iteration. Second, you know, they had like 3-4 different teams, right? But the second wave is like Randy Moss and Wes Welker, you know, you know that those guys, right? Vince Wilfork, right? That was that wave iteration, and then that last kind of back end wave was Teddy was the McCourty twins, you know, Darrell Revis sprinkled in there, Aki Talib sprinkled in there, Stephon Gilmore sprinkled in there, Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola. You know, so that like there's going to be different iterations of teams if it's going to be a true dynasty, right? So I like if Travis Kelce, if he retires, maybe not this year, but after next year, if this Chiefs thing is a true dynasty, that's how it happens. That's how it works, right? Those 40, like this is what happens. It's part of the course. With those 80s 49ers that won Super Bowl, what, 81, 84, was it 88? Like, you know, like, or I think 89, actually. Is it 89? I think it was 89. Yeah, it was 89 because then the Giants won it in 90. Redskins won it in 91, then Cowboys won it in 92. So, yeah, like, different iteration teams. Like, it started off as Joe Montana with Roger Craig and Dwight Clark and, you know, that was the crew, right? With Ronnie Lott, Eric Wright. But then in the 90s team, it was the same nucleus part, of course, right? But different type of team with Steve Young and Ricky Waters. Obviously, Jerry Rice was there in the late 80s, but Jerry Rice was still there. You still had Deion Sanders, you got Eric Davis. These guys, so it's part of the course if it's going to be a true dynasty. You're going to go through different iterations of teams. And like I said, the Patriots did it. They had like 3-4 different iterations, you know. So many Patriot guys, like they had different iterations. That's just what it is. So wouldn't be surprised if that happened. And if it, like I said, if it's a true dynasty, they're going to just replenish and replace. All right, so I wanted to get to Justin Herbert being out for the season, and I feel for this kid. And you guys know I'm not a Brandon Staley guy. He'll be gone after this season, but let's be honest. And I swear, if they don't alter how they do certain things what I'm about to talk about, I'm not even going to talk about it no more. I'm going to stop talking about it. But the Chargers can't continue to operate the way they do. You pay Justin Herbert the amount of money that they are about to pay Justin Herbert for several years down the line. It absolutely makes no sense to go and hire a cheap coach or to go cheap on the coach. So I'm sorry. I know everybody likes these young, flashy offensive coordinators like Brent Johnson, who I think these guys are good coaching candidates. But for this particular job and for this particular franchise, the Chargers have to do better. They have to do better in terms of who are they hiring, and because you just can't afford, you pay all this money for quarterback, then you go cheap. Imagine buying the latest Mercedes-Benz, right? Imagine buying the latest Mercedes-Benz, AMG, right? Whatever. Imagine that. And then the brakes go bad. You don't even fix the brakes, right? Like, what's the point of going, what's the point of getting an expensive car, an expensive, luxurious car, if you're not even going to take care of the brakes or just simple, basic issues? Simple basic needs of the car to maintain the maintenance of the car. Why do it? Right? Like, if you got a Mercedes-Benz, BMW, why put 87? Why put 87 in the tank? and that's the same thing with this Chargers. It's the same thing with the Chargers. You're paying your quarterback, who is a great talent, $200 million, and you go cheap on the coach. Why? So, and I think it's just a shame how they do it. So I don't want to, they shouldn't hire some young gun offensive coordinator. I will not accept it. And I'm not saying that Ben Johnson and these guys can't work out, right? But for every, you know, and Andy Reid was a coordinator, Kyle Shanahan was a coordinator, Sean McVay was a coordinator. But for every coordinator that works, there's like 10, 15 more that do not work out. Like, certain guys are not meant to be coordinators. They're just not meant to be coordinators. I mean, coaches. Like, and that is okay. You can be a high-end coordinator and just be not good as a coach. I think Brandon Staley knows his football. I think if he was to one day get back into a coordinator spot, and would it surprise me if he was a good coordinator? No, it would not, because that's how he got the Chargers job in the first place. He was a good coordinator for the Rams, but he just doesn't have it as a coach. Dan Quinn is the prime example of this. Dan Quinn, Cowboys pay him. Dan Quinn is arguably probably the best defensive coordinator in football. And I'm sure the Cowboys are paying him as such. But Dan Quinn is not nearly the head coach he is as a DC. Like, he's nowhere near that. His level of expertise and what he has been able to do as the DC of the Cowboys, he will never be able to match that same productivity as someone's head coach. Never. He's just not. He just wasn't built to be a head coach. And it's okay. It's okay. Same thing with Vic Fangio. Vic Fangio is one of the best coordinators in the league. He cannot coach. He can't be your head coach. He cannot be your head coach. And that's what it is. And with the Chargers, so I don't think they should hire some young guy. Because for every hit, for every guy that works out that was a coordinator, There's a shitload of guys that don't work out, and they shouldn't even have the job in the first place. Right? They shouldn't even have the job in the first place. So if this offseason, you know, if the Patriots decide to part ways with Belichick, if the Steelers decide to part ways with Mike Tomlin, you know, if Harbaugh isn't going to re-up his contract at Michigan and Michigan wins national championship, and he decides, hey, I want to get back into the NFL ranks, the Chargers better have those guys on speed dial. They better have those guys on speed dial, and they better give them the bang. Because they did the same exact thing with Phillip Rivers, where, and Phillip Rivers, he isn't as physically talented as Justin Herbert, but Phillip, really productive quarterback. You can make the argument he's a Hall of Fame quarterback or not, whatever. They wasted Phillip's career, essentially. And that's the thing about the Chargers. They always have good players. Like, from the Dan Fouts to the Kellen Winslows to the Phillip Rivers to the Drew Brees, the Sean Marions, the Sean Merrimans, LaDainian Thomas, Tomlinson, Antonio Gates, like Vincent Jackson. They've had really good players. Like, talent is not their issue. Keenan Allen, not their issue. Joey Bosa, talent is not an issue there. They always have been able to find really good high-end players. They turn out to be Pro Bowlers. They turn out to be MVPs, all pros. You get the gist. They haven't been able to hire you. They hire Mike McCoys, and you know they tried with North Turner, but they hired the Mike McCoys and the Anthony Lynns and the Brandon Staley's. Those guys don't fucking work. Like, those guys do not work for the Chargers. They just don't pan out. Sorry, they do not pan out. And you look at the rest. I'm a proponent of this. You look at the rest of your division. You got Andy Reid, who, I mean, the best coach in football, with Mahomes. They're not going anywhere. They're not going anywhere. And then you got Sean Payton. You look at his track record. It's pretty good. It's really good, I would say. And he's turned the Broncos around in 1 year. He's done a miracle. So I feel like it's a disservice to some of the players that they have and to their quarterback that they're paying $200+ million to. It's a disservice to just go cheap on the coach and continuing to go cheap on the coach. It's a disservice. It's a disservice. The Chargers got to do better than that. They got to do a little better. They got to be a little bit better than that. But I'm going to regress. I'm going to move on to my top 10 teams list of the week going into week 15. Can you believe that? Week 15. Christmas is around the corner. The new year is around the corner. The playoffs is around the corner. I'm going to give you guys my top 10 teams list. Let's start at 10, obviously. At 10, I got the Browns. I kind of felt like, Browns. But they continue to win games. They just play musical chairs with the quarterback spot. But look at this. Joe Flacco, over the past couple of weeks, has looked pretty good. And I'm not surprised. You got to give a tip of the cap to Kevin Stefanski. He's done a good job with maintaining and keeping this team above water. They've dealt with some injuries on their offense. They lost their most productive offensive player in week two. They still look afloat, right? Nick Chubb went out week two. He sustained that injury. They looked afloat. Deshaun Watson, starting quarterback, $230 million quarterback, out for the season. They haven't drowned. They ain't sinking. Browns play really well in their division. They play really good defense. I like this Browns team. They're sneaking to the playoffs. Can they win a playoff game? I don't know. But hell, I mean, all of the starting quarterbacks in the AFC are just dropping like flies. So who knows? Browns at 10. At 9, the Rams. I think the mere fact that the Rams, granted they're 6-7, granted I don't think they're the most talented, but Sean McVay, tip of the cap to him, he's been coaching his tail off. He's been coaching his tail off. Like, that's just point blank period. He's had a really good year of coaching this team up. Like I said, they lack talent in some areas, and they're just trying to vie for a playoff spot. Matthew Stafford, I've said this early on in the season. One thing about Matthew Stafford, he's just a gamer. Like, he's a gamer. He'll go out there, he can sling it across the yard, but he's also, like, he's comfortable and used to playing with inferior talent because he did it for years in Detroit, where he was really productive, he put up good numbers, and he'll keep you in the game. He can throw you into a game. Sometimes he can throw you out of it, but he can throw you into games. And the mere fact that the Rams had a fourth quarter lead and they took the Ravens to overtime at Baltimore, really, really impressive stuff. I got the Rams at 9. At 8, I got the Bills. You go into Arrowhead, you beat Kansas City, I can't get mad. Their offense got a little funky in the second half, but the Bills, they're you know, they're still right there trying to hang on by a thread. I still think I look at they have Josh Allen. He's responsible for 34, 35 touchdowns this year. That's the most in the NFL. He's been balling. He's been balling. Obviously, I think he has 9 straight games with an interception. So that's, you know, that's not the best stat. But he's trying to keep this Buffalo team afloat. Their defense is kind of crumbling. They got a big one coming up versus Dallas, but I got the Bills at 8. At 7, I got the Dolphins. Now, granted, I think the Bills, they demolished the Dolphins earlier in the year. Dolphins, they're an exciting – I'm taking it for what they are. They're an exciting team, but eventually it just wears off, right? It's kind of like, I don't know, like it's a lot of sizzle, not a lot of substance. Like, you know how you get a steak and it's fresh off the grill and it's just sizzling and it's just sizzling. But then the sizzle just goes away and then the steak is just dry as hell. That's kind of like the Dolphins. Like, a lot of sizzle, very little substance, right? Right. Like, you cut into the steak, it's dry, you know. I mean, the Dolphins, really exciting, right? You first taste the steak. It's sizzling. It's nice. It's hot. But the longer you eat it, you start to realize, like, oh yeah, this isn't like Ruth Chris or like Mastro's. This is just a regular steak. That's the Dolphins. That's the Dolphins. 9-4 team. They're pretty exciting. I got them at 7. At 6, I got the Lions. They've been struggling. I honestly probably have them too high. I would probably move them. For the first time in my podcast's history, I'm not even agreeing with my own top 10 list. Lions might be too high. Their secondary has been an issue. They make Justin Fields look like the second coming of Steve Young. That's not a knock against Justin Fields, but he typically plays really, really well versus the Lions for whatever reason. They just can't contain him within the pocket. But their secondary is an issue, and it's going to continue to be an issue. So we'll see how they fare. Jared Goff has been very turnover prone and very turnover happy over the past couple of weeks. So he got to clean that up. But this Lions team, you know, they're trying to hold on for dear life in the NFC North and clinch a playoff spot. At 5, I got the Eagles. You know, when you get belt the ass handed to you over the past 2 weeks, I have to drop you. You know, I like this Eagles team, but I have to drop you. 49ers came into Philadelphia 42-19. Then they went down to Dallas. They got belt the ass put to them 33-13. I can't keep you. You know, they can stay in the top 5, right? But I can't keep you within the top 2 or 3 when last couple of weeks you've had your ass handed to you. I just can't do it. Philly, they got secondary issues, kind of similar to the Lions. Secondary issues, that's not going to change. I don't know how you help that. I don't know how Nick Sirianni speaks life into his DC. I don't know. Jalen Hurts look a little bit off kilter. The offense, I think, is fine, but defensively, they haven't been great. They have not been great, and it's not going to change. So I got the Eagles at 5. At 4, I got the Chiefs. I like the Chiefs' defense. I love the Chiefs' defense. I can't trust their offense. I don't know what offense I'm getting. So I'm just not sure about them in terms of what the offense output would be on a week-to-week basis. But they have the best coach in football. They got the best quarterback in football. So I'm gonna keep them there for now. We'll see how it goes over the next coming weeks, though. At 3, I got the Ravens. The Ravens, I like everything about this team, right? From the defensive physicality standpoint, my top 3 teams are all physical. They all play good defense. Passing game, kind of iffy. They had Lamar Jackson throwing the ball 40 plus times in the overtime game. That game was messy. It was rainy. I don't know if you want Lamar throwing the football 40 times in that type of weather, but hey, they won. They found a way to win. I like this Ravens team at 3. At 2, I got the Cowboys. I mean, I'm sorry. Hey, I'm sorry. You can call me a homer. I got the Cowboys at two. Defensively, they've been playing really well. You know, outside of the Seahawks game, defensively, they have been playing really well. Like, they have been playing really well. They do a great job at forcing turnovers. They forced three versus Philly. But then also, you look at what they're doing. I like, first, they look buttoned up. The Cowboys look buttoned up. They look disciplined. They didn't have too many crazy penalties versus Philly. They didn't shoot themselves in the foot a lot, you know. And then, obviously, Dak is playing at a super, super elite level. Cowboys at two. And at one, I got the Niners. This team, I don't know. They're really good. They're really good. Not too many weaknesses. They're really good. Brock Purdy is good, right? I don't care what people say. Brock Purdy is good. He's a good quarterback. Is he elite? I don't know. But if you even asking that question, you already acknowledge that he's good. So he's a good quarterback. That's who I have at one. The Niners, I think they're the most complete team heading into week 15. I think they're the most complete and the best. So that'll wrap it up. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode today. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Always, I will catch you guys on the flip side later this week, hopefully. Peace, deuces, I'm out.